Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby, actually. I am here in studio with Phil. Hello, Philip.
Hello, JB.
And down the line is Tim. And if you're wondering why I sound so neurotic, it's because it has been a very, very stressful day with our Tier 2 tour to Madrid just around the corner. How say you, boys?
Stressful, JB. Surely everything is already planned to perfection, running smoothly, like a well-oiled machine that the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast is.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's the case for everything we're in control of.
Yes.
Well, let's not burn any bridges just yet, Timothy. So I've got Madrid coming up. I've got my business end of year, i.e. the firm I work for. It's nearly April, which is obviously busy. And then to compound it all, they throw International Women's Day right in my face. So the worst day of all.
You've been very...
Go on, Tim. I wasn't sure. I don't know what I was... I don't know what I'm allowed to say or what I'm not allowed to say. There's minefields everywhere.
Oh, everywhere.
Social justice warriors at every turn. And I don't know what I'm allowed to say or what I'm not.
Oh, just don't say anything. Just don't say... Just end your life. Just end it. Because that's what they want.
Anyone who identifies as a woman is great and equally great as anyone else.
Correct. Yeah. Well done. Enjoy your day.
Equality is the most important thing and everyone is equal in everything.
Absolutely right. So let's get into it. Let's talk about some things which won't be that equal this week. Let's talk about England-France. Le Crunch.
Le Crunch. The famous Le Crunch.
Right, so to recap Eddie Jones's side, he has... made three changes, some into his 15, some enforced. Well, we don't know. We assume some are enforced by injury.
Which ones are you thinking? Others.
Well, the hooker selection of Jamie George.
Oh, yeah, that is a big assumption,
Dylan
isn't
Hartley
it?
Injured.
Hartley
injured.
Hartley is injured.
Sure he is.
Yeah. And we don't know. I suspect he would have picked Sam Underhill in the back row with Chris Robshaw on the flanks.
I think you're right. I think you're right on that, because I think if he hadn't... Well, yeah. I think you're right, because Haskell's on the bench, basically. Does that make sense? I think otherwise he'd have put... Yeah. They would have had Haskell starting. I think Underhill would have gone to the bench, actually. So he'd have been in the matchday squad, is what I'm trying to say.
I think Haskell and Underhill are just a one-for-one. You only have one of them in the squad.
Yeah, exactly.
And Underhill would have been on the bench ahead of Haskell.
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm saying.
Okay,
I think.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure that's what you did say, but
yeah, it's been a long day, Phil. It's been a long day.
Okay, we'll go with it.
My one observation reaction to the England squad.
Yeah,
just purely the reaction is, I found it quite whingy from other England fans. Like the number of England fans that have been saying for ages, I want to see Watson at fullback. I want to see Jamie George at hooker. And they've sort of parked those two positives and just focused on, the back row. Just it feels a bit whingy. I'm quite positive. I'm excited by this England side.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, here's where I would go with it, okay? Am I the only... Okay, let's go with Anthony Watson first. Am I the only person who thinks he's not that good at fullback?
No. I've watched him frequently at Bath, and I've said this before. I think he's an exceptional talent, truly exceptional talent.
Agreed.
I think often, particularly when I watch him at fullback, his decision making isn't quite right.
Yep.
He kicks when he should run, and he runs when he should kick.
Yep.
Now that's a very broad statement, but that's the feeling I get.
Agreed. The other one,
I also think, I would say Anthony Watson seems to excel on bigger stages and surrounded by really good players. You saw that with the Lions. We've seen that with England. And he's got Elliot Daly in that back three with him, who is very intelligent.
Well, I guess the thing with Watson is he's just that good that no matter what the circumstance, he has to be picked. And I see that. But I believe he's only that good on the wing. I don't believe he's that good at fullback. And I think they're missing something. I mean, maybe Elliot Daly has a better skill set to play at fullback.
But he's not got the experience. He's hardly played there.
No, it's true. I mean, it does baffle me why, if the England attack is a problem, let's face it, it is, why Alex Goode isn't the obvious choice. I mean, he's so obvious. But, you know, there you go.
I want to temper this slightly, just on a general point, that these problems that England have.
Ooh, I'm excited.
It feels a bit disrespectful to Scotland, who I said on a previous podcast, they're incredibly good at home.
No, it doesn't, actually. I think just Scotland exposed England. I don't think there's anything said about the Scottish here, because the Scottish didn't just beat England, they battered them.
Well, my point here is to sort of say that there's huge deficiencies in England because they lost to Scotland, I think it's overblown. I think the talk of England's problems... Are there things they need to evolve slightly and get better at and be more on point with? Yeah, totally. But I think there's just been a massive overreaction. The pendulum has swung completely the other way. They've won 24 out of 26 and they lost to a Scotland side who were outstanding at home.
Yeah.
Pushed New Zealand all the way, battered Australia at home. I'm not saying there aren't areas that I want to see improvement on, but I just think the negativity around England all of a sudden from people, I just massively overblown. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think people are just sort of coming around to the fact that England aren't maybe as good as they hope to be, and it's all about relativity. It's all about not the physics theory, obviously. it's all about where did England want to be, and that's where they're going to come up against the problem. They probably want to be somewhere like where Ireland are, or you know, touching the All Blacks, and they're just not there. And this is the problem. I think a lot of international games have been played over the last 2 years, which are just not of a high enough standard. So all of England's autumn internationals were not of a high enough standard to test them truly. I believe it's probably the same last year. I don't think that some of the Six Nations teams that they've played so far have been that good. So you've got Italy, you know, you've got Wales, who I think are okay. They can score a lot of tries when they want, but they're not great. So, of all these games, where have England's truly world-class tests been?
If you look at it from that perspective, the only one they've really had in the last 2 years has been Ireland in Ireland,
yep,
in terms of world-class. And Scotland did put in a world-class performance.
Yeah. To be fair, they won three in a row in Australia. And that's bloody amazing.
That is very difficult. Maybe a slightly weaker, slightly undercooked Australian team.
Yeah.
But to go back to your point, Tim, I think you're right that the failings of England, particularly from that game, have been magnified by two things. One, we had a rest weekend. So there is nothing... So Six Nations is obviously the biggest thing at the moment. There is nothing for rugby writers to write about other than Six Nations in this week. And the last thing that happened was a poor England performance. So they're going to continually write about a poor England performance.
But this is what I don't get about the rugby writers. Why are they not writing about the process rather than the results? Anyone can write about the results. But what about the things leading up to it?
They are doing. What are you reading?
Huh?
What are you reading? Because that's what I'm... That's what I'm...
No, all I'm reading is... If you listen to the tone that they've taken post-England... I mean, Mara Todgi was a bit of a scapegoat. I think Stuart Bourne said that they needed to change five players.
Stephen Jones?
Yeah, Stephen Jones, sorry. I mean, they've gone from... Yeah, they're a pretty good team. I mean, changing five players, ditching... Lawrence Dallaglio, ditch your captain. You know, that isn't analysing the process. That is reacting to the results.
Captain's gone.
Captain's gone. So Lawrence is right. Well done, Lawrence. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now, can I draw your attention to what I think is the most interesting matchup? I don't know if it's going to be key, but it's interesting.
Yes.
Matthew Bastereau running a hard line towards Ford and Farrell. How do they stop it?
Well, Farrell will go very high and probably get bounced.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, imagine going for your big shot on Matthew Bastereau.
And Farrell's probably 4 stone lighter, something like that.
Well, he's two... I think Bastereau is heavier than any England forward. He's just approaching 20 stone, I think.
Well, so Mako's around that weight, I believe.
Is he?
Nathan Hughes is also around that weight. But I don't believe the listed weight of Bastereau. I think he's heavier than his listed
oh,
weight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, he's 2 stone heavier than Teo, apparently.
3 stone was what I read.
Oh, really? Mm.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing, right? I don't think Teo is the right guy to put in there. So I think what the thought is they want Teo to go forward.
Yeah, as an alternative to Nathan Hughes for the go forward.
Yeah, and I get that completely. But I think I'd have to play him at 12. I think I'd have to play him at 12 for two reasons, okay? So if you play him at 12, you can play Jonathan Joseph at 13, who is very good defensively. As good as he is going forward, he's very good defensively. And if you're a big fella and your thing is dominating other people, when you can't dominate another person, i.e. Matthew Bastereau, what do you do now? Because you've done it all of your career. Whereas Jonathan Joseph can make a tackle. Well, that's it, because he's never been as big as everyone else. I mean, he's not a small bloke, but that's not his game.
He's not big by international rugby standards.
Yes, yeah, correct. Then on the other hand, you've got this rapid little guy. He's not even that little, but I think I'm saying his name right. Dumaru, who is great, and he loves to run that little outside arc. So between them, you've got this lovely balance of massive amounts of power and huge amounts of pace. So they should have really moved Teo in one, kept Jonathan Joseph, and then kept Farrell in the team, moving him to 10. That's what I think. Because it's a game of chess. And at the moment, Eddie looks like he's made all of the wrong moves.
From your perspective, what's your take on that, Tim?
Give me the positive spin on that.
Well, the positive spin is when you're the ranked number 2 team in the world and you're aspiring to win a World Cup, you focus on the danger that you possess and two playmaking distributors. And Owen Farrell has actually developed himself as a ball carrier in the last year or two. We've seen that in Premiership games and in England games.
Yeah.
And also, when you've got those two guys and you've got the threat that Ben Teo will pose in attack, he's going to keep those centres honest, and that's going to create space for a back three with unbelievable amounts of gas.
It's one of the fastest back threes I can think of.
They're not slow.
Not just in England, in world rugby.
Yeah.
They are lightning fast.
They are athletes first and rugby players second. Maybe not Elliot Daly.
Yeah.
Maybe, definitely Johnny May.
Maybe a bit
Watson,
of Johnny May.
Watson's somewhere in
Watson's
the middle.
Watson's a mix, yeah.
So what you seem to be saying, JB, is we should match up with France.
Well,
big
this
man,
is it.
Big man, quick man. I'm going, no, what I want to see and what I think... The reason why people want Anthony Watson tried at fullback, let's see if he can do it, is because the danger in those wide channels of Daly, May, Watson could wreak havoc. And that's what I want Owen Farrell to unlock.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going to happen because I haven't seen Owen Farrell do that in that position yet. He kind of did for the Lions, I guess, but not for England. And you know
well,
what?
Not for England in this Six Nations.
No.
He has done repeatedly previously.
Well, I kind of think that a good attack is not about great attacking players. I mean, they help, definitely. Great attack is more about systems. You know, look at Exeter Chiefs. You wouldn't say they have the greatest attacking players. Maybe Henry Slade is their outstanding talent there. But they do play lovely attacking rugby. And that's where England let themselves down. What you're doing is you're picking a second playmaker who's not been too effective, but what are you giving up for that? And quite frankly, it is the defence and the matchups. So that I don't think it's going to be the be-all or end-all. I think that will happen up front somewhere. But it is an interesting one.
Now, just on that point, kind of your... So Tim, you're quite happy having Owen Farrell as the second playmaker. Jay, you're calling for a change and putting Farrell inside. I'm actually quite...
Well, I did say at the weekend that I would quite like to see Farrell, Tao, Joseph, but I'm not unhappy with it. As
Farrell,
it
Tao, Joseph must make you more excited than Ford, Farrell, Tao. It's more balanced for start.
Tao is distributing's not good enough at international level.
But I kind of think they should get the extra playmaking from fullback.
Well, you could do if you had someone like Goode in the squad.
Ugh, but messed up.
I'm trying to work out if it's just Eddie Jones being stubborn or if it's the right thing to do. But at the moment, I'm quite positive that Eddie Jones has stuck with the two playmaker system, which is a system that, until last weekend, had worked very well for England in general. I do take your point that the attack in general in this Six Nations hasn't been great. They scored some nice set-piece tries against Italy, but then I think Tok H would score some nice set-piece tries against Italy.
One or two, I guess. They're very well coached.
I think that's probably credit to Eddie Jones. The problem I have with almost his stubbornness is I really would have liked to see a change in the back row. I would have liked to see not playing with three flankers. It's what I've mentioned before. And someone more athletic in there, be it Haskell, Underhill, who's obviously injured, or Simmons.
Interesting.
I don't think Haskell's more athletic than Courtney Laws.
No, he's not. You're absolutely right there, he isn't. But the thing which Phil said last week, which I think he's alluding to, is I think what you mean is pace the breakdown rather than sheer athleticism. Because if that was the case, Johnny May would play, play in the back row. Okay, so sheer athleticism and timing to the breakdown are two completely different things, and that's what Haskell has in abundance.
If I think of one position on the pitch that is ideally placed to just smash rocks all day long, think about teams you've played in.
Okay.
Which position above do you reckon hits the most rucks in a game?
That's a good question.
Second row,
probably right.
Yeah, so I go back to the way I broke down the England's game against Scotland. Is it wasn't a personnel issue, it was a intelligence and tactical issue. They just didn't commit the men to the breakdown. But Courtney Laws is the perfect man if you want someone just to smash rucks. I understand if you want to bring a different type of play to the game and then you might want a Sam Simmons. I totally get that. But the sort of question mark that's been thrown around today is like, well, they've got to sort the breakdown out. That's why we needed Haskell, not Courtney Laws. Well,
yeah, I completely agree with that.
Locks are the men that just smash rocks all day long.
Yeah, but there's a certain balance, isn't there? And I think the risk with playing Haskell, and I've been calling him to come in, you know, for what, 3 weeks or something like that?
Longer,
probably. And
5 years, you've
five,
been called.
Yeah, 5 years. So where does he do his good work? He does his good work against people that are jackling. I'm telling you now, John Barkley.
Actually, no, I think we're rewriting history a little bit. What Haskell was famed for and what he was incredible at in Australia and what he was in the team for was defence.
Yes, so he does two things. He adds substantially to your tackle count, and going forward, he basically protects your rucks. I mean, those were two things. I think that's pretty uncontroversial.
With a shift in mentality, I think England have got the men to take care of their own breakdown. They just need to not be brain dead.
I mean, you might be right. And 2 weeks worth of training, doing nothing but breakdown work, might see a completely different England.
Yeah.
But here is the crux of the matter, and this is where it might go a bit wrong, is the whole Haskell theory about bringing on Haskell against John Barkley or against Hooper or Pocock. Well, that's great. But if you don't do that, he then all of a sudden becomes less effective because you need him to do some ball carrying, which is when you need a Sam Simmons or a Courtney Laws who can do some great ball carrying.
Yep.
And that's a dilemma that you face.
Yeah. So Haskell is not the complete player.
Yes,
he's,
exactly
he's
right.
Very good in a narrow field.
Yeah. But like, who is the complete player? Try and find me one, because everyone does things slightly differently.
Yeah. Who is the complete player?
The complete back rower.
The complete forward, I would have said probably 12 months ago, I almost would have said Itoje.
Yeah.
As a complete forward, because he does everything. Sean O'Brien is the complete forward, actually.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, Sean O'Brien is the most complete forward I know of.
But even with Sean O'Brien, they were going with Sean O'Brien, Stander and Heaslip at one point, and even that balance didn't work. They even needed Omani there.
Yeah, because Omani's so good in the line-out.
And I'd actually say, over the last year or so, Courtney Laws hasn't been far off it.
Yeah, I think Courtney Law...
He's an incredible line-out forward. He's improved his ball carrying exponentially, and he's a massively destructive defender.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's probably one of England's better players, and I think I'd have him on a short list of potential captains should Farrell or Hartley not be around.
I'm not sure about that. Just because I've never seen that leadership role. Because I don't think he's ever done it.
I think he has it at Northampton.
Maybe when Hartley...
I think he might have even been club captain.
When Hartley and Tom Wood were not there.
Mm.
Mm, I'm not sure. I can't recall it. Anyway, so maybe I'm being a bit harsh on... Well, I never actually said Laws, but it does just disappoint me that there's three second rows in there. But, to their credit, Laws, Anitoji, and Launchbury on their day are probably almost as athletic as most back rows.
Yeah. Do you think France will be able to get one over on them up front? It seems a weird game to be playing against the French to try and arm wrestle them to death.
I'm not sure about the French pack. They've got some outstanding players. That second row is not great from France.
Who is in the second row again? It is
Vahamina.
Thank you.
The penalty machine, Vahamina.
But he is massive, though.
He's massive. Will Skelton's massive.
Ugh.
Yeah. Tony Buckley was massive.
Avion Lewis Roberts is massive. Legend.
Future Wales tight head prop.
Yeah.
Avion Lewis Roberts.
That's the one. Future reserve. Future backup.
And they've also got Paul Gabrielagues.
Where's he from? Is he from Lyon, by any chance?
Don't know off the top of my head. He is from Stade Francais.
Is he young?
24.
Yeah, I'm sure he played very... I'm sure his lad is playing very, very well against Bath in the final. Very well, actually. Okay, so I guess the myth about the French team is they're big, they're fat, and they're going to be unfit. But you just have to look at Guillaume Girardot's stats to see that isn't quite the whole story here.
It's not true right across the board. I would question some of their conditioning.
Yeah, Matthew Bastereau's. But like, he plays in a way unusual to anyone else on earth. So true. He gets away with it. It's going to be far tighter than people think this.
I was just going to say, I think England will edge it, but I think they will only edge it. And I could that will leave a lot of the... Again, I think the negativity... what I predict is England will have a narrow win, which we should be delighted about, and the negativity will continue. People will have completely erased from their mind that Ireland, who I believe will go into the final weekend with four wins to their name. They only just beat France with a very, very fortunate injury time drop goal.
It's so difficult, true, right? Because France are on their third fly half. They've had a sex scandal. They've got a new coach. So the team that only lost to Ireland by one point, they're wearing the same shirts, but they're not the same people. I don't know. Until you actually watch the game, I don't know.
So I'm with you, Tim. I think England will win, although I think probably slightly better than Ireland did, because it is a completely different France team. And I do think, I will give some anticipated credit here to the England coaching team. I think they will learn some lessons. I think they'll learn quite a few lessons, particularly in defensive shape and particularly around the breakdown from that Scotland game. So I think England will win by kind of 5-7 points, something like that. But then all of the negativity in the press will flip to back to being positive and back to focusing on the All Blacks rather than focusing on the big game, which is Ireland, who are probably the second best team in the world. Then England will lose to Ireland.
Do you know, I've got a horrible feeling that England are going to have one hell of a beating in camp. One hell of a beating by Eddie. And France is going to be... Paris is going to be absolutely electric. Pretty exciting. Anyway. Oh, hang on. We've lost Tim.
Ooh.
I think we'll just crack on. And if you can join us in a minute, that will be absolutely great. Is there anything you want to add to this? Are you convinced yet that England are going to lose. Have I convinced you?
You've certainly sowed some seeds of doubt in my mind. I was thinking about this before. I am questioning England more than I ever have done before. And I'm sure a good chunk of that is down to you and your negativity.
And me texting you all day on various groups.
Hashtag downfall 2018.
Yeah, everywhere you look.
Everywhere. Texting me, emailing me, work phone, personal phone.
Well, do you know what? England's saving grace in this game, if they do win, it will be French disorganisation. And just as a little thought experiment now, what sort of national disaster would it be if England were down to their third fly half? And their who would be on the bench?
Ooh, well, their third fly half would probably be Magic Marcus.
It would.
Who's what?
He's only a year away from taking up fourth anyway.
True. He's incredibly talented. He's only played about 20 games of top flight rugby, and he's 19 years old.
And he's amazing.
He is amazing. Behind him, there's been a number of fly halves in the squad, including Slade. Nope. Malinder. Nope.
No. Not him.
Piers Francis.
That is, yep. Yeah, now, this is actual national disaster now. Actual national disasters.
If Piers Francis was playing for England, if it got to that, that's a humanitarian crisis.
I think the UN steps in.
So who'd be on the bench? Honest,
Piers Francis would be on the bench.
Well,
and Marcus would be starting.
Cipriani hasn't been called up to an Eddie Jones squad, as far as I can remember. All those others have been called up to Eddie Jones' squad, but surely you just bring in Sippers.
Yeah. Surely.
Yeah.
I mean, if your life... Yeah, if your job depends on it.
In the same way that Wigglesworth has not really been involved in the England squad.
But they're different, aren't they? He's like a safe pair of hands. He's trusted. He's professional. He has the right... You know, he brings an apple to training. You know,
a teacher's pet.
Exactly. That's what Wigglesworth is. He's not Cipriani.
But Cipriani
Cipriani
not...
arrives with his windows down, his music blaring.
With a bottle of vodka that he's stolen from the nightclub the night before.
Exactly. Not even drinking it, just pouring it on the floor for reasons unknown.
I think Cipriani has calmed down a lot.
Cipriani recently, you know, has been on a lot of podcasts.
Has he?
Yeah, he seems to be like reinventing. I guess the thing is, when you spend most of your life trying to... You know, convince yourself that you're some sort of urban bad boy, and then you mellow out when you become like 30. you sort of have this awakening. What have I been doing? And I think he's going through at the moment. He's on the Joey Barton podcast of all things.
I think the more important question is not what have I been doing, is what am I going to do with the next 50 years of my life? in 50 years' time, how am I going to be living? How am I going to be paying for stuff?
What a grisly question. Yeah, enough of Danny Cipriani. There is other rugby to be discussed too, Phil.
There is. We've probably disproportionately discussed England because the biggest game of this weekend is not England.
It's Bath not, it's versus not Northampton.
In the Anglo-Welsh Cup.
Yeah, that's the one. I still call it the LV.
Yeah. Free advertising for LV.
Yeah, do you want to break that one down quickly? Or
I've not seen any of the teams. I'm not sure if they're out yet.
Bath look very Bath-ish. All look very like mid-season signings. Northampton look like they're actually going to really put in a good effort here.
So it's at the Rec, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, I was only joking when I said, do you want to break it down? But we can.
No. Let's go on to what I think is the bigger game of the weekend.
Leinster versus Scarlets. Sean O'Brien's playing and he's captaining Leinster.
Really?
Yeah. So Sean O'Brien will be playing rugby this weekend.
Wow.
Just in time for the big one.
What might not be the big one if your prediction's correct and England lose? It might be the third place playoff for England.
Yes, quite. Well, no, because there's still a Grand Slam at stake.
True.
And on Ireland going to Twickenham.
An Ireland winning a Grand Slam at Twickenham would be incredible.
Exactly right.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So,
but before that, there is a bigger game of the weekend, and that the biggest game of the weekend, in my opinion, is Ireland Scotland.
Is it bigger?
I think it is. Ireland, as you've just pointed out, the only unbeaten team.
Yes.
They are going for a Grand Slam. And Scotland on the back of a historic win against England. So I think it is. I think it's a bigger game than England-France. France, who have been, let's say, mediocre for about 5 years.
So are Scotland the new France?
The new France is in the kind of mid-90s France.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Oh, yeah. Are Scotland the new old France?
Yeah.
Because yeah, they are very good at home. Very. And they fling it about. And I tell you who is very French. I mean, unbelievably French, really, is Finn Russell.
Russell is. So Russell, Hogg is very French.
Yep. Well, less so. And I'll tell you why. Because Hogg is a product of power and athleticism. And he's been to a gym. You know, he's done a bit of squatting. Whereas Finn Russell has pipe cleaner arms. And I think he views rugby more as an art than as a, you know, physical endeavour, which makes him more French than Stuart Hogg.
Okay. Laidlaw is in the mould of a petit général.
Yes, Laidlaw's very French.
And Hugh Jones has a certain Philippe Seller about him.
Mm.
The pace, the outside break, the reading of the game.
Yeah, if only they had, like, a Teddy Thomas character to throw in there as well.
Blair Kinghorn?
Perfect. Well, I mean, there is a serious point to this, which is they're very good at home, but they're going to Dublin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a different beast, and I'm not sure they're going to come out on top at all. In fact, just cast your mind back to week one of the Six Nations and see what Wales did to them. They absolutely battered them.
Very true.
And is this a good Wales team? Well, it could potentially be a good Wales team, but it's, you know, it's not a classic, is it?
I think it is a good Wales team. I think Scotland, I think there was a couple of issues. One, not having Laidlaw in there. Two, having Hugh Jones at 12 and Chris Harris at 13 rather than Horn or Dunbar at 12 and,
yep,
and Hugh Jones at 13.
Hugh Jones makes a huge difference. Was he not available for the first game?
No, he played 12.
Did he?
Yeah, because so there was no Dunbar. And they went for Hugh Jones at 12.
Because he's so mega at 13.
Oh, he's phenomenal. I mean, if there was a Lions tour this year, you'd expect his name to be in the mixer.
Him and JD would be fighting it out.
Yeah.
No two ways about
that. Absolutely. So, yeah, there's a couple of things. So I think they're a bit more settled. They've got more usual personnel. So I think Scotland, I don't think they're going to win.
They're not.
But they can cause some issues. And one of the few areas where Ireland are weak is when they get stretched out wide defensively. And that's Scotland's best attacking threat.
How do you see this Ireland team?
This is a very, very good Ireland team.
Why?
Justify
your opinions.
Good combination of youthfulness and experience.
Okay, nice.
Right across the board. Phenomenal experience in a multitude of positions and depth. Having guys like McGrath and Henderson and Carberry and Marmion and Lamore all on the bench.
I tell you what I think is most encouraging for them.
And Cronin on the bench.
Cronin's great, actually. Cronin is one of my favourite hookers. Is it Porter that's on the bench?
Porter, the tight head.
Now, that's what I like. I like the fact they've discovered a young lad who's good enough and he's in already. And the guy who's going to develop now over 2 years, that to me is the sign of a great, great team.
James Ryan, Dan Levy, Jacob Stockdale.
Yeah, God.
Young lads. All three of them are starting.
Yeah.
Lamore.
God.
is on the bench.
You're absolutely right. I don't know why I was so blinking on Porter.
Oh,
because they're actually all over the place.
They're all over the place. But then you've got like 50 to 100 cap players all over the place as well. Healy, Rory Best, Devin Toner, Omani, CJ Stander, Connor Murray, Sexton, Keith Earls, Rob Kearney.
So
it's such a good mix of the two things.
Here's how I see this Ireland team. Brutally efficient. Let's be honest, not particularly flashy.
Nope.
But they are able to conjure up some magic just through Sexton. So it's almost like Sexton is almost minding them. And when they win, they go through the systems and they do it nice and efficiently. Well, that's fine. But then when they really need to go up another gear, they've got Johnny in reserve.
Yeah, they got Johnny in reserve. And then they've got the players, Connor Murray. When they beat the All Blacks in Chicago, Connor Murray was phenomenal.
That was, yeah.
Carberry came on and played half the game as well.
That, do you know what? The Murray performance, the only way I can really describe it is swashbuckling.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you watch these Irish players play and they are almost robotic in what they do. And the reason that All Blacks game was so great, actually, is because it all felt like they were fighting for every inch and they were trying absolutely everything to get one up on their opposite man.
So, we're both saying Ireland win?
Yeah, I'd say
big,
so.
Big win?
Don't know. I'm going to say, yeah, it's going to be a big win in terms of performances, I think. I think Ireland are going to comfortably beat them. But I don't think the score is going to be massive. I don't think that Scotland will score a ton. And I think Ireland will score not just enough to beat them, but enough to beat them well, comfortably. I don't think they'll stretch themselves.
I think Ireland by probably 7 to 10 points.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think Ireland will build a lead through penalties and playing in the right part of the pitch. Scotland, I can see scoring one or two tries through just the sheer talent that they've got out wide.
What makes this interesting? Like an early score for Scotland?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Finn Russell does start chucking it wide and Hugh Jones gets his hands on the ball early.
Well, it worked against England.
Ooh, I don't know. I'm going with Ireland. I'm going with your prediction by 7 points.
Yeah, I think that's fairly safe. Just one thing to mention, the young lad who's coming on the wing, Blair Kinghorn,
yep,
who we mentioned before, very talented player. 6'5", rangy runner.
Is he 6'5"?
Yeah, but he's kind of rangy, leggy runner.
Yeah.
Not like a...
Like Sam James.
Not a bit more rangy than Sam James, I'd
say. Sam James is 6'4".
Yeah, but he's not a rangy runner.
No, he's not. He's a willowy runner.
I'm trying to think who he's like in terms of running style.
So let's think of big lads. Like George North is broadly that height.
But he's way heavier.
Way heavier.
Visser, way heavier. Julian Surveyor, way heavier.
Who's that? What about I was going to say like a Visser, but he's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I'm thinking more like a Haley type runner.
Ooh.
He's probably not quite that tall.
Yeah, because Haley's about 6'3".
Yeah, he's a tall, slender. He's that kind of build rather than the Visser, George North type.
The powerful athlete.
Yeah. But no, good runner. He's still only very young as well. I'm sure he's only 21. But he's a handy player. Plays most of his rugby at fullback for Edinburgh. So watch out for him. But it's a hell of a place to go to make your... Well, I'm pretty sure this is his... if it's not his debut...
Very early game.
His first couple of caps, and he's certainly not started a Six Nations game before.
And he's got Stockdale in front of him, probably.
Yeah.
Stockers!
Who's about the same age, but he's a bigger, stronger boy. Stockers, who's probably about 6'3", but maybe 10 kg heavier than Blair Kinghorn.
Last game then is Wales versus Italy. I'm not going to lie, this is the fixture of the tournament that never inspires me.
So this will be taking place in between us watching Spain demolish a weakened Germany team.
Yep.
And us doing a live podcast.
Yeah, that is correct.
So we will probably have other things on our mind.
Yes, correct.
Like necking bottles of cava with the Spanish, the King of Spain.
Ashley, the King of Spain is going to the game.
Ashley Giles is going to the game.
That's such an in-joke, mate.
That's not an in, that is a genuine...
That is an in-joke.
That's his nickname. If you go on Ashley Giles' Wikipedia page...
He's known as nickname, the King of Spain.
The King of Spain. Because I think it was a misprint or a mistype. The King of Spin came up as the King of Spain. Anyway.
So Ashley Giles is going to be... I can't believe that. That's really cool.
It's really cool, yeah. If it wasn't going to be cool enough, the King of Spain is going to be there. So, yeah.
I've got a feeling we're going to spend a lot more time watching rugby in Spain than we ever thought possible, even a year ago.
Absolutely. I cannot wait. Wait, very quickly onto the Wales team.
What do you want to say about it? And I'll agree. And I'll agree with you. You can go home.
I can say anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gatland's lost the plot.
Yeah, fine.
It's interesting actually to hear Gatland say he thinks perhaps playing bigger was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I was surprised when he did it actually.
Yeah, I was. Now he's almost gone too far the other way in this. Instead of having the tried and trusted the biggers, the half pennies. He's changed half the team. He's brought in, well, Gareth Ainscombe starts. Owen Watkins is in there. James Davis, Tipperick, obviously, is back in. Bradley Davis, Elliot D, Nicky Smith, all start. Now, this feels...
Does Rob Evans start?
Rob Evans on the bench.
I'm not interested. I'm done.
On the bench, Rob Evans, Seb Davis, Ellis Jenkins... Alad Davis, Patchell, and Halfpenny's on the bench. I mean, why is Halfpenny on the bench? Halfpenny start. This is the same conundrum with Mike Brown.
It is.
Mike
it?
Brown and Halfpenny start or nothing.
Yeah, the boring fly hot. Actually, why would you? I mean, I actually can see an argument for bringing on Halfpenny to make a difference because he's more attacking than Mike Brown, but more importantly, he's better than Mike Brown positionally, and does allow you to play defensively with your fullback with your wings up. But
I would disagree he's more attacking than Mike Brown.
Oh,
I would agree probably defensively about that.
I mean, I think watch him at the Scarlets nowadays, and he's like a player reborn. It's like he's found Jesus.
He still does all the same things. It's just the players around him are doing brilliant things.
He's actually started scoring tries.
he scored a couple. He's finished off a couple of tries. I'll give you that.
Yeah, I mean Mike Brown. I think he's had like. Because I know this because he's in my fantasy team. I'm like, why is my Brown not scoring more? I'm sure he's gone for almost a year without scoring for Harlequins.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But he has had, I think maybe in the last three,
was last year, by the way.
Maybe even the last three Six Nations where he's been most meters made, most defenders beaten. And up there in the try-scoring charts as well.
It's not as good as Halfpenny, and that's the end of that.
But the reason I say this is... Gatland possibly going too far. So that team that he's got on paper there, he's never going to play together again.
No, never. Agreed.
Never, ever, ever. So you're seeing combinations that will just never happen in serious games. So it's almost pointless. I'd much rather see, well, drop in Tipperick instead of Navidi, perhaps. Or,
yep.
or James Davis instead of Navidi, perhaps. Drop in Elliot D, Hooker, perhaps. Drop in Gareth Ainscombe, perhaps, but don't do it all at once.
Yeah, like throw them in bit by bit, because the problem is, if you have a bad game, you might never play international rugby again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you have a real shocker, and maybe you're having a shocker because everyone around you isn't quite as good as the players that you could have around you.
Yeah.
And it's a conundrum, because no one ever wants to say, no, I don't want that international cap. But maybe you're better off not having it with these guys. I mean, they're not bad players, of course they're not. And I'm putting this in the wrong way. I'm making out that because they are lesser players, that you know it's bad for the individual playing. What I mean is they're less established combinations.
Yes,
I mean, that's the more important one.
Yeah, that's my point. Because it's not you drop any one of those players and it's absolutely fine and it's good and you can see them in the proper team and the proper system.
Yes,
you change half the team and it's not the same systems and it's not the same team.
This is one where Italy could sneak it if they were half decent. They could push Wales here.
I think that's the problem. Italy, as I've repeatedly said, half a dozen very good players. The rest are...
They need to get Pelledri in that side.
Mediocre. Yeah, Pelledri would be a good addition. But I think Wales, even with this team, I think Wales will win quite comfortably. And I think probably more importantly for Wales than any individual performance is their ambition to go wide, which Gatland has demonstrated in this team. So hopefully, hopefully we'll see some of that.
Now, as for Italy, yeah, they've got their quote-unquote stars. There is a guy who plays for Benetton who I'd love to see have a bit more of a crack. I mean, he must be injured. I think his name's Espedosa.
Esposito.
Esposito, thank you.
Like the Justin Bieber song.
That's the one, yeah.
Winger.
Plays on the wing. And he's a really good player.
Yeah.
So that's everything I've got to say about Italy and Wales.
Very good. So, big Wales win?
Maybe. Don't know.
Okay.
Wales to struggle through it. Anything else you want to talk about?
There's been a couple of other stories this week, but maybe we should save them for the
Oh, there is one story.
Podcast.
There is one story, my favourite story of maybe the last 2 years. I am not uncorking this one until we are live on stage in Madrid, and I simply can't wait. It's not even a rugby union story, and I just can't wait to talk about it at length, maybe for a couple of hours.
Some of the quotes from the story that you are referring to are incredible.
It's glorious.
So if you happen to be in Madrid on Saturday or Sunday, come and say hello.
Yeah, do that.
If not, you'll have to wait till Monday's podcast, which hopefully we will get out on Monday. We will get something out on Monday.
Can you imagine?
But yeah, if you are in Madrid, we will be in O'Neill's on Saturday afternoon for the game. We will be at the Federation of Spanish Rugby Stadium to watch the game. And the live podcast will be kicking off at 7 p.m.
7 p.m, all right? 7 p.m, 7 p.m, 7 p.m.
At O'Neill's, straight after Wales, Italy. If you see us around, say hi, have a beer with us. We'll talk
about... Don't look me in the eyes. Look at the floor.
And we'll talk about all things rugby. And you can ask us, does JB really support Sale?
I don't.
You can ask Tim Cocker to show you his world record winning pint.
Yep.
Which he will gladly do over and over and over again.
He will.
Does it on demand?
Do you know why... can I tell that? No, I won't. I won't tell it. I won't tell you that story unless he's here.
Okay. You can tell it in Madrid, though. Just like you'll be telling everyone the Ellis Genge story.
Correct. Right, so subscribe, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever the kids do nowadays. Apple Podcast, I think it's called now. There's Acast. There's all sorts of channels and ways to find us, so go and do that. And if we don't see you in Madrid, we'll see you Monday. Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.